Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. It is the 14th day of June, 2000... No, sorry. It only feels like the 14th day of June. It's the 14th day of December, 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and say hi to folks like Jug of Punch and King of Cups and Texas Tea and Will in Chicago, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who only recently got his interweb tubes back. Congratulations. No, I'm not kidding. It is, Agnes and I woke up about 7 o'clock this morning, and we immediately looked at each other and said, you know what? We got to turn the air conditioner on. No kidding. It was kind of unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, really. And it's been that way all day. It was 66 degrees at sunrise here. I know. Weather is not climate. Climate is not weather. And it makes about as much sense for me to talk about this in terms of climate change as it does for Senator Snowball to bring a snowball into the Senate in January. But still, this is bizarre. And understand, it's not just warm, it's warm and muggy. It's warm and humid. It's sticky. It's icky. I mean, there's a cycle. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. There's a cycle that exists naturally in all of us inhabitants of planet Earth who live in temperate zones. We get kind of spoiled. And we expect spring to behave like spring, summer to be summer, autumn to be autumn, and winter to be winter. And by the time summer with its blazing heat is past, we're ready to cool off a little bit. And that's why we cherish, that first whiff of wood smoke in the autumn. And, I don't like for it to snow up to my kneecaps, but damn. This is silly. I'm overdressed. I could be doing naked radio right now. Oh, the eye bleach. I know. Jug of Punch tells me in the chat room, it's 58 degrees there in Northeast Ohio. I imagine it's probably pretty tepid in Boston, for God's sakes. Although I heard that there was snow in the mountains in New Mexico. Our buddy Tim from L.A. posted a picture of a strange thing hovering over the city of Los Angeles. I think they were called clouds. And in the clouds was rain. Yeah. So, go figure. But we get attuned to these cycles, and we get a little discombobulated when they don't cooperate, don't we? I do. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, tells me we slept with the whole house open night before last. She says we've had not one flake of snow. Humid here yesterday, 40-degree high today, 60 tomorrow, 42 the next day. I'll be sick. Well, if it's any comfort, I already am. I don't know if you noticed last week, but the program has been afflicted by dead air pauses of about 5 and 10 seconds duration while I go through paroxysms of sneezing. And Agnes and I both woke up on Saturday morning. We were exhausted from covering for Mike and Kathy Friday night, just because we're not used to, you know, that all the way up to midnight thing. And the little tech demons that beset us with the stream and whatnot. Thanks again to Ben Birch for the amazing job he did fixing that in medias res. But we both woke up on Saturday with, like, aching joints and a little bit of kind of nausea and sneezing and runny nose. I don't know. And I didn't get my flu shot this year, damn it. And I think I'm due for a pneumonia shot, too. I love those. So that's how we begin this 14th day of December 2015. A gentle note, this is a listener-supported radio network. We do, that's how we keep everything going here. That's how we stay on the air. And so we try to raise $200 every evening. And a reminder that everybody who contributes this evening, well, your name, as by the end of the program, everybody who's contributed there in the past week, their name will go into the hat for the drawing for the final feather, the final turkey feather portrait, framed, mounted, and matted, I guess. Well, anyway, it's really pretty. And at the end of the program, after it's all over, we'll draw a name from the hat, and that person will win the final feather. The first two are already gone. So thank you very kindly to the artist, and thank you very kindly to Bob and Dave, who are going to be the proud owners of said feathers, and to the lucky owner of the third feather. So there'll be a bunch of mailing going on tomorrow. That it's not 92. 92 degrees won't keep the post office from opening, will it? No. And some of us have multiple entries in the drawing. Some of us are trying to maximize our odds, and that's some smart playing. Yes. So that's coming up after the program. In the meantime, like I said, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, and 32 at 6 and a quarter. That's how we can make this all happen. And the reminder, we're always looking for new subscribers. $10 a month will get you a horn bumper sticker. We're doing some massive envelope stuffing and database examining and addresses, and Agnes writes a lot prettier than me, so she's doing the addressing. So that's the plan. If you want to contribute, of course, go over to headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute and go through the PayPal interface there. If you want to make it a subscription, it's just a matter of checking a box on the first page and the amount of money and everything. If you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, and some of you do, I am given to understand that there's at least one envelope winging its way toward the spider-infested echo chamber that is the Horn mailbox, and I'll be able to tell Boss Man Wayne to take his, he doesn't have to wear his spider-proof gloves. Thank you, Alex. Yeah, and thank you very kindly to Ed for getting us started this evening. But if you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, it is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Okay, so that's all the preliminaries. I think we're good to go. It's 10 past the hour. And I'll tell you right off the bat, we had some tough news here in the Hills and Hollers, in this little community. You know, if you live in a big city with thousands upon thousands, maybe millions of people, death visits all the time. But just about an hour before airtime, I found out that another one of our community's teenagers has chosen to exit this existence. And in a wee little bit of nothing of a town like what we live in, everybody knows everybody. And it's devastating. Earlier today, I found out from Dr. Bill that a colleague of both of ours for many years, among other things, one of the most beautiful, brilliant announce voices ever, and incidentally, the man upon whom the character of Les Nessman was based, had passed away. It was sad news. But sadder still when one hears that another member of the future generation have decided to check out. Oh, good. I sound like I'm talking into a can. How lovely to hear. I can't engineer that right now. Let's see. Well, maybe I can. No. I don't know. That might provide a little bit of... who knows? Who knows? I can't... Can't really do anything about it right now. I mean, it's hard enough to do the program, you know, without trying to, you know, engineer it on the fly as well. That's what made things so exciting Friday evening. Tested the Malloy stream three times earlier in the day, and then went to it on, minutes before air, and nothing. But that's one of the things. It could be, some of this stuff can be on the server end, the transcoders and whatnot, and the Knuten valves and flageolets, and sometimes they don't interface, and that's how you get in trouble. But all that is prologue, and it is prologue to the idea that oh, there's part of my problem. One loses a little bit of the juice in one's cans when one has to share them with one's lovely wife producer. And we've got a splitter, and I wasn't getting... Never mind. I did make it all better. Goody. Yeah, I just gave it. I gave it a little bit more of a kick on the low end. And let's see. That might be a little too much. Okay. Anyway, I think that's going to be all right. So we've gotten all of that out of the way. And lo and behold, I almost feel like praying this evening. Because we have a bounteous feast of Moranity this evening. We're covered up in them. I mean, there's
there's levels of Moran out there, and that we're constantly being challenged. But merciful heavens, what I saw transpire in the last 2-3 days, it beggars my credulity. I started thinking back to, have I ever seen anything this stupid? Has there ever been this? It's kind of like the weather. I don't remember any Decembers like this. I scarcely remember Decembers like this growing up way down south in Talabama, right. Ah, thank you, Glenn. Glenn letting me know. Good on TuneIn. Appreciate it. Is anybody still listening by Stitcher? I don't know. But it is. It's Moran Monday. And there's no getting around it. And there's definitely work to be done here. There are fields to be harvested, as it were, reaped. Our bounty of Moranity reaped. So let us waste no further time and get after it, shall we?
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. Step in off the carnival midway to this little thin cybernetic veil of madness we call Moran Monday on the Horn. They're all here. Every last one of them. The birthers, the deathers, the ninthers, the tenthers, the baggers, the birchers, the booger eaters, the libertarians, the republicans. Every last conceivable right-wing weirdo and moron is right here for your consideration. Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes. You can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells the morons. You just can't tell them much. For less than 17 cents per hour per prescriber of programming, you will hear the likes of which will leave you awestruck. Awestruck, I tell you, awestruck. A little advisory, of course, is always due, and that is that people entering the Moran Monday cybernetic veil of madness tent should keep a close eye on and keep their hands on children, purses, wallets, small animals, European-style messenger bags, and anything that you find valuable, because being right-wingers, they can get grabby. Oh, yes, they can. They certainly, certainly can. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Oh, God. I mean, this is mind-boggling. One is challenged. This is challenge. One is challenged to, find exactly where to start with the amount of abject, untrammeled stupidity that the right wing, and unfortunately at least one progressive person, has put into the universe in just the last few days alone. We may be reaching critical Moran mass, for all I know. But let's start here, because I had a note from our dear friend Jude, who put me on to a story of something taking place in the Philadelphia area. Mm-hmm. On the whole, I'd rather be in Philadelphia. So, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, a Quaker school in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania,
has eliminated from its reading list for its high school juniors, once again, because every now and then we have to go through one of these freaking spasms, has eliminated what many consider to be the seminal, defining American novel of the 19th century. I am speaking, of course, of none other than Sam Clemens, Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn. Mm-hmm. Huckleberry Finn is in trouble. The Friends Central School in Montgomery County, PA, has removed the book from its course requirements reading list with the statement, "We have all come to the conclusion that the community costs of reading this book in 11th grade outweigh the literary benefits." Really? They do? Do they? Somewhere poor Twain is turning in his grave and, well, or Kurt Vonnegut's sitting next to him or not, going, "No, it's okay. It's okay, Mark, man. They do the same thing with Slaughterhouse-Five. They don't understand a goddamn thing about it. Literary benefits, social benefits, cultural benefits, or even how's about moral benefits." When the book finally began to be appreciated and taught in schools, it was thrown out of schools in the 19th century, too. You know why? Because it presented a white boy being friends with one of them. And Mark Twain poignantly paints the picture of the misery attendant upon the life of Jim, a slave. And yes, there's a word that gets used in the book. And the precious little 11th graders didn't care for the word. It's a hard word. But when you start intellectually cleansing the literary legacy of our country, and you start pretending that somehow or another that word didn't exist, or that it shouldn't be understood within the context of racism and bigotry that is the stock in trade of this country, oh, you're in trouble, sunshine. Big trouble. Lots and lots of trouble. Now, they're kindly going to leave the book in the library there, one copy at a time or whatever. They're going to leave the book in the library there at Friends School. But no longer will 11th graders be required to read it. Because there are community costs of reading this book in the 11th grade. What the hell does that even mean? Community costs. Hello? This is not some public school. This is an incredibly expensive, costs more than some college's Quaker Friends school. Remember, it's another one of those Friends schools that the presidential children often attend, and in fact, Chelsea Clinton attended, and I think Amy Carter back in the day, and Sasha and Malia Obama have attended, sure. Not that school, but a similar one. The Friends Central School of Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. Have said, Mark Twain is not welcome here because of the community costs. Does this mean, and I don't know much if beyond the name of the place, I don't know much about the Friends Central School of Montgomery County, PA. But I'm guessing that it's not one that is regularly attended by the ramen and beanie weenie eaten crowd. No, this is so. I just wonder: is this, can they not teach it because little precious privileged white children hear that word in that novel, read that word in that novel, and think somehow that that means it's okay for them to use it in modern vernacular? Is that the community cost we're talking about? Because I'm thinking that's a teachable moment. I'm thinking that's one of those things that, one of those places where you can really, really get a message across, which is, of course, after all, in large part, the purpose of putting great literature in reading reading requirements inside you know, high schools. But no, sorry, Mr. Twain. The community costs of reading this book in 11th grade outweigh the literary benefits. Shut the up. I don't know. Maybe the students are you're just too sensitive. Yeah, too sensitive. I don't object to what they're replacing the book with. I think that should probably be on the reading list anyway. They're going to use the narrative of the life of Frederick Douglass and, as the report goes, possibly another as-yet-to-be-disclosed novel. Mm-hmm. So let's all just forget that Mr. Clemens ever wrote Huck Finn. And let's pretend that he didn't shine a ghastly light on the brutal, brutal system of racism that was extant in the United States. Let's just pretend let's all just be John Roberts and declare that racism is over so we can suppress whosoever vote we damned well feel like. How's that? But wait, that would involve race. Oh, never mind. So we got that, and then we got this. Again, on a college campus. And look, I am who I am, and I routinely argue in favor of racial sensitivity training, racism awareness training, cultural diversity training. It's beneficial. I've had it, and I benefited from it. When one learns to look closely and see the operations of these kinds of these forms of bigotry, whether it be personal or institutional or cultural, one learns, and hopefully one it takes, you know, one more link out of the chain that forms our profoundly bigoted racist history in this country that did not somehow come to an end with the end of the Civil War and didn't come to an end when Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his I Have a Dream speech and didn't, by God, come to an end when Barack Obama was elected president. Post-racial, my ass. Carol Baker noting, here's my favorite Twain quote, man becomes a monster in groups. Well, again, we are in Pennsylvania, and we are in the Lebanon Valley. The dateline on the story is Anvil, A-N-N-V-I-L-L-E, not Anvil, smart Alex. Anvil, Pennsylvania. Where they have a an institution of higher learning called Lebanon Valley College. Now, understand there are some collegiate institutions, say like the University of Texas, where starting next year you're going to be able to take your Freedom Protector to class and maybe teach that math professor a thing or two if he gives you a D instead of the C that you need inside your major. Because freedom. Now, places like the University of Texas have dormitories that are named after revolting, repulsive, disgusting, old, nasty, racist, slave-owning, treason-committing Civil War generals and whatnot. You know, the kind of people who said, "Not now nor ever as the sun shines upon our fair state shall we let the Negro and the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing white children ever go to school together. Because it is written in the Gospels of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, slaves, obey your masters." Right? Yeah. And so there are sometimes moves on these college campuses to maybe take those nasty old racist freaks' names off the buildings. Mm-hmm. Sometimes successful, sometimes not, because when you do try to do that, then the people, you know, the pissed-off, knuckle-walking mouth-breathers show up with their Confederate flag, and they say, "It ain't hate, it's heritage." Well, why aren't you flying the most important Confederate flag? Well, which one would that be? You mean the one that flew over the first Confederate capital down in Montgomery, Alabama? No, the white one you flew in 1865, you freak. So sometimes that happens. And then sometimes stupid things happen. And good on these young people for being aware of the need for inclusion and the need for diversity and the need for sensitivity and the desperate need this country has to get rid of its racist past. But somewhere along the way, and I would suggest maybe it's either in the history or the English departments, somebody at Lebanon Valley College is dropping the goddamn ball. Because a standing room only crowd gathered inside a lecture hall in the Miller Chapel earlier this month on the campus of Lebanon Valley College. And student organizers delivered demands that they hoped would bring about a greater level of diversity in faculty and the student body population. And this is important insofar as something similar was argued before the Supreme Court of the United States recently, at which point in time we found out once and for all, if there was ever any doubt, and frankly for me there wasn't, that Antonin Uncle Nino Scalia, the son of the American leader of the pro Mussolini movement during the 1930s in the United States, we found out once and for all that he should be wearing a white robe and not a black one, right? And we found it out in pretty stark terms. Because, among other things, in moments like this, we understand why they won't allow cameras, you know, moving picture cameras, into the Supreme Court, because then somebody might get an angle showing Uncle Nino back there. Making little tiny crosses and setting fire to them down below where the people at the bench. Yeah. So here's what happened. In an argument over whether the University of Texas, whether they can use any racial components . Well, Uncle Nino let his Confederate flag fly, so to speak, because he didn't like the fact. Okay, so here's how it works, if I understand it. If you're in the top 10% of your high school class in Texas. That's tier one, and you're an automatic entry. And there are no racial considerations at all. With that in mind, well, a young woman sued because she said that the second tier uses racial considerations and that those are unconstitutional. Now, in its statement defending the policy, the University of Texas argued that they aim to promote higher admission of qualified students of a diverse racial background. And Fat Tony, Uncle Nino, wasn't having none of it. And it's bad enough what he said. It's worse when an organization like the New York Times gives him cover for saying it. During oral arguments last week, Uncle Nino, unreconstructed fascist, said, from the bench, "There are those who contend that it does not benefit African Americans to get them into the University of Texas, where they do not do well, as opposed to them having to go to a slower track school where they do well. One of the briefs pointed out that most of the black scientists in this country don't come from schools like the University of Texas. They come from lesser schools, where they do not feel that they're being pushed ahead in classes that are too fast for them." Mm-hmm. And then he continues and says, I'm just not impressed by the fact that the University of Texas may have fewer black students. Maybe it ought to have fewer. And maybe some, you know, when you take more the number of blacks, really competent blacks, admitted to lesser schools, turns out to be less. And I don't think it stands to reason that it's a good thing for the University of Texas to admit as many blacks as possible. Sick yet? Contemplating what in God's name does it take to get this man off the bench? And the answer very quickly is, you can't. If we had a functioning Congress, and why do I even bother to continue after saying that? Because that's just a laugh line. If we had a functioning Congress, we could get rid of him. Because anybody in the Congress with a conscience reading those statements would say, I think it's time for us to maybe have a little meeting, impeach his ass, and let him be tried in the Senate and get his sorry, racist, fascist, goose-steppin'-lovin', goddamn brown-shirted ass off the bench. And he can take his little whips and his hair shirt and his little piece of barbed wire that he wraps around his goddamn leg with him. Yeah, I don't know. Carol asks, are you sure that's what he said? Because, you know, his voice could have been muffled under the white hood. Maybe all that was just in solidarity with those now suspended poor little misunderstood what are they called, dweebs or noobs or the bigots there at the Citadel down in the home of American sedition. Or if you prefer to be a little more colloquial about it, treason's backyard, South Carolina, Stan. Mm-hmm. No, he really said these things. Here's the fun part, though. As Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting notes, The New York Times cleaned him up. Adam Liptak wrote the story. He's their Supreme Court correspondent. And here's how he wrote it.
In a remark that drew muted gasps in the courtroom, Justice Antonin Scalia said that minority students with inferior academic credentials may be better off at a less advanced school, a slower track school where they do well. I don't think it stands to reason that it's a good thing for the University of Texas to admit as many blacks as possible.
You see, but we've already read what he really said. He didn't say minority students with inferior academic credentials would be better off at worse schools. He said African Americans generally. Not the slower African Americans, but all of them. You know, the ones with the crazy 99th percentile scores on the ACT and the SAT and all of that, and the 4.0s coming out of high school. They'd be better off down at Bug Tussle State University Polytechnic Community College and Bartending Academy. All of them. But, you know, I guess the New York Times needs to, I mean, after all, you know, Uncle Nino is a New Yorker. You know, maybe they're just looking out for one of the homies. This is disgusting. And really, no kidding, if we had a function in Congress, remarks like that would make it clear that this man has no business sitting in judgment of so much as a jaywalker in this country. And that he should be offered the opportunity to either resign or face impeachment. And personally, I would favor impeachment because I'd like to give the man a chance to walk into the Senate and just watch the N-word Tourette's take him over and see him possessed by paroxysms of the bigotry and the racism and the prejudice that just fills his stinking, filthy, vile, hateful, miserable, godforsaken place where we think a soul might otherwise reside. A note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Bob, Bob, Bob. Okay, see, that's how you do it. Ron owns that, you know. So don't be monkeying with the copyright or the patent, okay? Bob, Bob, Bob. It appears that once again you have taken a fine upstanding conservative out of context. Fat Tony was just expressing, as is his First Amendment right, his belief that the Negra would do better off on a slower track. How could you find anything wrong or racist about that? How? Let me count the ways, Ron. Exactly. Meanwhile, another Ron, who did not say Bob, 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 Ron one, so, you know, let's not, yeah, I just want to make this clear. He didn't say that. There's not one, nor two, nor three, nor even four or five. Six is right out. Ron, in the unfrozen wastes of the far north, where it's like cool and drizzly, not even freezing temperatures here in, you know, December, Ron notes, if I remember correctly, the rule establishing lifetime tenure for Supreme Court justices was put in place at a time when the life expectancy was such that one was regarded as very old as of reaching the age of 60. There are some countries which shall remain nameless that require justices and senators to retire at age 75. Just saying. Not saying. Just saying. Right. Of course, if that was the rule in the U.S., Ruth Bader Ginsburg would be gone and the court would tilt even further to the right. Yeah. Well, I mean, the framers and you know, they discuss how they want the Supreme Court and the court system to work. In the Federalist Papers, C.E.G., Dr. Bill, and they wanted to ensure some level of independence for the judiciary so that nobody could kneecap them for their politics or their opinions or what they had to be free to do what the Supreme Court was designed to do. And so they get a lifetime appointment upon good behavior. That means not being caught out late to the strip club and running around drunk with a stripper named Tiffany or anything, or Mercedes. Mm-hmm. That's what that means. And, you know, not committing murder nor mayhem nor being out there dueling out amongst the cattle there in front of the Capitol building. Right. That's why they get what they get. But there is, or it was meant to be, a sort of sword of Damocles hanging over their heads in the form of the potential for impeachment. If you screw up, Congress can consider impeaching you in committee, send the vote to the whole House floor, vote on it. If you're impeached, you get tried by the Senate, and then bang, your ass is booted. Okay. And this is one of those moments where he's not just expressing his opinion. This man just turned the clock backwards 180 years, not 150, 180. I mean, he just, I guess he looked over to his very white dog, Mr. Peabody, and said, "Tell Shaman there to set the Wayback Machine for Justice Taney. I always did love that Dred Scott decision there." Yes. And above all, you do not want, if you're a federal court judge, you do not want to be caught a running around with a stripper by the name of Marvelline LaFleur. Oh, I live for those little moments. I do. I had to mute the mic. Daggum. Steve in New York says, "Why are you a picking on the good Supreme Court justice? He's just not politically correct like all you pinko commie fascist colonial hating negro loving liberals are." And there we have it. Another question, this time coming from Doubting Thomas over at FYI, and some say one Bob, but there's like six exclamation points, so I don't know. You may be verging dangerously over into gimmick infringement, Thomas. "Why are you mad at our white hooded exceptional American justice? He's just finally showing us how to make America great again." Well, and there you have it, don't you? Mm-hmm. So with all of that as background and backdrop, a very serious meeting, standing room only, was held at the Miller Chapel at the Lebanon Valley College. And student leaders presented a list of demands after a week of equality-driven student demonstrations. That's the way Penn Live describes it. The demands were announced at the end of the meeting on Friday, and they were handed to University President Dr. Lewis Thane. And among other things, they want a more diverse curriculum. Okay, that's good. That's good. Colleges broadening their curriculum and being something other than a damn trade school, I'm all for that. No pushback from me. No, absolutely not. On the other hand, one of the buildings on the college campus is named Lynch Memorial Hall. Now, it's not named after a famous antebellum pro-slavery advocate in the Lebanon Valley of Pennsylvania, because I don't think such a person existed. It's just named after a person named Lynch, L-Y-N-C-H. But by God, the young student activists want that building renamed. They don't like the name Lynch. Because they say that that name on Memorial Hall has racial connotations. And frankly, if I was Dr. Lewis Thane, the president of the university, I don't know how I'd begin to address that. Folks, this is named after someone named Lynch, and Lynch is a name. It's a name that is primarily Irish in origin. And in fact, there are both white and black people with the last name of Lynch. See Lynch, Marchand. And really, you know, it's college, so we're open and we're trying to be inclusive. Here's a good one for you, and this comes from the land of liberal arts and rhetoric and things like that. Never make a weak argument. Strong arguments never make weak arguments stronger. Weak arguments only make strong arguments weaker. It's for real. But really, I guess Tree Beard and Celery have gotten down there and started organizing it. You know, Brad and Melissa Shithead. It's wrong. Now, we've got to get rid of Lynch Memorial Hall. I mean, you know, it just conjures all the wrong images, you know. Really? We thought it conjured the image of the person named Lynch who gave us all the money to build the building. Why don't we smoke a big fatty and form up like a drum circle, and we can play our kazoos and shit, and we can have some beers, you know, and maybe some wine, and another big fatty. And then you can get all wasted and shit and see how it is that we see it, that the name Lynch on that building has got to go. Morons! And we just want to make sure that that there won't be anybody trying to make anybody read Mark Twain or anything, you know, because that is so oppressive. I mean, I feel like I'm being oppressed when I say Mark Twain. I mean, you know, that wasn't even his real name, you know. I mean, why was he a liar? Why did he lie about his name? Was it because he's a racist? Huh? Yeah. Yeah, probably. Yeah. Here, hit this. Smooth. I told you, we have a bounty of morons to be harvested this evening. A note coming from Robert in Australia. What is the definition of a great country? All this talk of making Merca great again. Has anyone ever asked what that means? I ask that all the time, Robert. And because I don't run around trying to have conversations with wingnuts, because I don't cast pearls before swine, which in that context is pretty goddamned insulting to the swine. And I never understood why one would... Well, never mind. It's Bible stuff. No, I asked that because that's the question that has never been successfully put to T-Rump. If you're going to make America great again, when... That means that America was great at some point, and you're going to return us to that time. When is that time? 1858? Oh, the sun shines bright. No. When was it? Was it great when Richard Nixon was trying to tear at the very fabric of constitutional governance via the Watergate criminal conspiracy? Was that it? Maybe America was great when Ronald Reagan was firing all the air traffic controllers and raising taxes. and saying that Social Security was a good thing. Mm-hmm. So nobody knows, Robert, nobody knows. What makes a country great, he asks. What is the definition of a great country? The biggest army, the biggest navy, overseas aid? Apparently, cable television is the answer there. Cable television and reality TV programs and 57 choices of flavors of breakfast cereals. Mm-hmm. Or Coca-Cola cans with your name on them. Mm-hmm. I would say a country is great when it strives to meet the needs of all of its citizens, when it strives to protect the weakest and most fragile among us. That makes a country great. A country is great when it is not so entrenched in its own orthodoxies that it cannot imagine another or a different or even, dare I say, a better way to do things. That's a great country. That country is not great, which most effectively kills other people, particularly when they are brown. That country is not great that permits its 0.1% economic overlords to make the entire nation of some 350 million people its own little sweatshop. That's not great. Oh, hell no. But they're just the fact of the matter is, and I think Robert is kind of reaching toward that, is that there aren't that many aspects of greatness which can presently be applied to the United States of Merca. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, indivisible, under God. You know it. Meanwhile, Thomas over at somesayfyi.com, fyination.com, says, Bob, one exclamation point. Getting a little nervous, aren't you, Thomas? I'm not a grammar Nazi or anything, but last I looked, a name wasn't a verb, unless you're talking about Rand Paul when you plagiarize something. Ooh, well played, well played. You're on the toaster list tonight, Thomas. Thomas continues and says, definition of a great country? Whites only, all others need not apply, and don't let the sun set on you here. That's pretty much the definition of Merkin greatness, as well as Merkinceptionalism. Yep. And so it is that we have the front end of a very potentially busy Moran Monday, and lots more stuff to work on, by God. Robert in Australia says, I'd agree. Yes, I'd agree with that definition, Bob. So there are very few great countries in the world. But let's be a little bit optimistic, Robert. Let's say that in some instances there is greatness in the attempt. Hmm? Yeah? Yeah. In the attempt. Trying. But the problem is, we're not trying. Up over in Oz, where Robert is, they're trying. They're legitimately making an effort. They're trying. And the other side is trying to pick it apart and tear it to pieces. But anybody, any Australian, when they get sick, can go to the doctor and get excellent health care, access to prescription medications. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can't say that here. Can't say that at all. So, no, not so great. Not so great. And consequently, we find ourselves at the end of the first hour's filibobster. Like I said, much, much, much more. To come. And just a stunning. Maybe every Monday just does this to me, because I spend so much time looking for morons over the weekend that I begin to see morons everywhere I turn. I don't know. All right, then. We'll take a break. And see what's... see what's shaking on the other side of the hour. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Thanks, Glenn, for getting us started this evening. Much obliged. We got 190 to go now. Thank you very kindly, Glenn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
No one needs anyone. They don't even just pretend. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans.
Americans, I'm afraid of the world, I'm afraid I can't.
That song just always comes in handy, doesn't it? God is an American. God is an American. Yeah, yeah. This is the Horn, More in Monday, and a busy one it is. I was looking, and I read an article over at Raw Story, and it's a good article. And this isn't technically a More in Monday nomination. It's of course, you know, most of the stuff at Raw Story is reposted from other places with a couple of notable exceptions. The wonderful T-Bog being primary on that list. Jessica Valenti over at The Guardian. Let's stop acting like our guns are more important than our children. So, I've put this question to gun goobers far and wide for quite some time, and I can never get them to commit to a straight answer for some reason or another. And the question that I put is this, and it's a hypothetical. Hypothetically, if you could know for a fact that if you personally got rid of your personal freedom protector, Second Amendment remedy, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, ammo-sexual, gun-dementalist guns, if you could know for a fact that that would prevent one child from being killed by gun violence, would you do it? Now, to you, me, sane people, the answer is, well, yes, of course, I would save a child's life. But to the Second Amendment remedy ammo-sexual gun goobers, they immediately start wetting themselves and throwing tantrums and having hissies. So while the article is a good one, and I mean it really is, our children need us. They don't need fear. They don't need classes on how to get a gun away from a shooter. They need grown-ups. We are so shamefully attached to our guns that we'd rather tell our children to run towards mayhem than support policies that may stop it. Right. But that premise, let's stop acting like our guns are more important than our children. Jessica Valenti, may I submit to you that they're not acting. Their guns are more important than their children. Witness the home in Kentucky. I can't get it out of my mind. Where Daddy made sure that the little ones had their very own firearms when they was 4 years old. And one of the children used the little Cricket 22 rifle to the 4-year-old or 5-year-old used it to blow away his 2-year-old baby sister. The guns were more important than the children. Right? Yeah. Consider the following segment from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. This is where we are in Merca now. It involves Elizabeth Hasselbeck, of course, or Elizabeth Hasselbeck, as we like to call her. And they actually used a segment on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And they titled it, when they put it up on the web, Self-Defense Moves Your Teens Must Know. Oh, dear.
Well, in an active shooter situation, 5 seconds can mean the difference between life and death. But there are some things that you can do and your children can do to make a difference. Here to show us how, self-defense expert Soke Tony Morrison and his co-instructor Seppi Melamed, along with Gabriel, David, and Eli. We thank you for joining us today. Obviously,
thank you for having us.
In the wake of the terrible news that we're hearing and really what people are calling the new normal, we're hearing more and more both support for kids going through drills to deal with an armed person in their school, and also something on the other side, a little fear in parents as to, well, if we're doing these drills, will it make the kids afraid? Do we need to be having this conversation? Tony, where do you stand on this issue?
Well, I stand that we can't make their kids ignorant about the fact that the world is a dangerous place right now. So we don't want to scare them to the point where they're paralyzed and they're not going to be kids and enjoy their life. But at the same time, we have to educate them, and we start by telling them the things to look for, to be more vigilant, to pay attention to what's going around in the surrounding, and we call it situational awareness, being aware of what's going on, so that this way they could have a fulfilled life without being afraid, but they're aware of what's going on right now.
So moving from scared to being aware and then prepared is what you
right.
really do, is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
And Seppi, you're nodding, so maybe I'm right on track.
But
can I ask some of the students here, Gabe, do you guys have active shooter drills? Do you have lockdown drills in your school?
Like once a year, we usually do a lockdown drill where everyone hides behind. So the shooter, if he were to look through the window of the door, he wouldn't be able to see us.
Okay, David, do you do the same thing?
Yeah, we do the same thing. We do drills, so everybody's prepared for the worst.
And do you get scared when you do that?
No, you know what's going to happen. You know what the routine is for the school. It just has to happen.
Okay.
You got that? Do you get scared? No, you know, you just know it's going to happen. Now, this is a little kid. Obviously, his voice has not changed yet. And so maybe he's, what, fifth grade, sixth? And by sixth grade in his school here in Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, indivisible, under God. By the time he's a sixth grader, he knows that sometime in his life, his school is going to go into lockdown because somebody's going to want to come in and shoot it up. Because freedom. Because when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. No, it's just going to happen. It's just going to happen.
And Eli, when you go through these drills, even through your practice here, do you feel more prepared, more able, or do you feel more scared?
Yes, ma'am, I feel very prepared. I feel like if I know what's happening, especially through my training, I can be able to make a proper step.
Okay, well, this to me, this sounds like an enabled heart that I'm hearing. Someone
yeah.
who's willing, able, prepared, aware, and able to actually do something because they've gone through some steps. So let's right. go through one right now. You guys, Tony and Seppi.
Okay, I didn't issue one, but I should. It's more in Monday. I kind of take it for granted. Hockey puck. Get the hockey puck ready. You know what? I found something. They've got duct tape out there that only sticks to the duct tape itself. It won't stick to your hair. It won't stick to your face. It's not like it's not like, you know, waxing your face, or it doesn't hurt, because it hurts when the duct tape comes off. This duct tape only sticks to the other duct tape, so you might want to get some of that. I think it's called play tape. Yes, I saw it in Spencer's Gifts, okay? I had to go in there with Ferg. He was T-shirt shopping, and what has been seen cannot be unseen. But I'm thinking, because it's going to be perfect for the hockey puck. It really, really is. You might want to use the hockey puck. Just go ahead, get a good grip on it. Yeah. Oh. Right. Yeah.
You're gonna display for us and exemplify what would happen in an armed shooter situation.
Right.
What would that look like?
All right. So I'm going to pretend that I have a gun here, and if I
this
was an
stapler.
Active shooter, and there was a wall or something, and I'm pointing the gun at someone,
okay.
And Seppi is going to disarm me.
Okay, and that's coming from behind.
That's coming from behind. So what happens is if you're hidden in a doorway.
Yeah.
And have you got that? Yeah. Fox News, Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and this boob is trying to teach children to be little ninjas who rush active shooters in their schools. Now, understand that the sensei or majestic noble graciousness or whatever he is that's standing there, understand he stood and pointed his stapler, because it's a stapler, not a gun. They wouldn't let him have a Freedom Protector there in the studios of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, I guess. I don't know why there's such a bunch of simper and commie panty waste that they wouldn't let a guy have a gun there in Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, but they are. So he had to point a stapler. So he made sure that he stayed pointed in the same direction and never turned around toward his associate who was coming up and making grunty noises and taking the gun away from him. And, of course, she also, because she's been well-trained and she's a professional at this, she also didn't staple herself either. So, word.
Gunman is searching. He's searching. As soon as he comes and he has his weapon out, we're going to attack the weapon immediately and start to attack the gunman.
Okay, so, Stephen, you came on the weapon side. You kind of ducked under the elbow, and you came in through his arm to get that weapon.
Yes, when I duck under the elbow, it takes him away. I duck under the shoulder. It takes me away from his line of vision, so he won't see me till I actually have grabbed the weapon, and I'm attacking and disarming.
Let me ask you something else. You then turned and then use some moves on him. Do you keep running once you do that, or do you turn and actually like fight, kick, and get this guy down?
Well, once you engage the gunman, you have to just take him out.
Okay.
You have to fight strong. So you're not going to actually try to get away until you actually make sure that you've done some damage to him, because if you don't, then he'll just pursue you. So
superb.
Once you engage the gunman, you have to completely engage him until he's subdued.
What if there are two people? What do you do?
That's
if you've got a buddy in this, if you've got a teammate,
right? Well,
what's the strategy?
Well, then you need two ninjas. You need two little pre-pimply faced, cracking voiced little ninja boys who will run up and like kick you and stuff and take both people's staplers away. Yes.
Once we're hiding, let's say we couldn't run away and we hide, and then we realize that we might be discovered, we have to basically communicate with each other and say, listen, this is what's going to happen. If I grab the gun, you guys are going to tackle the person, but we all have to be in it together. We all have to work together as a team.
Okay.
Let's roll.
In order to subdue the individual.
Can you walk us through one step here, one thing that these...
You know, this is going to stop school attacks in schools, isn't it? Because now all the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Christian, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals are going to know, hell, them little sixth graders are going to kick my ass. And then, I mean, I probably won't get killed by the police after I kill a bunch of people, and they'll just send me to prison, and I'm going to be the one that they go, hey, ain't you the one that went in to shoot up the school, and you got your ass kicked by a little sixth grade girl? Come over here. I'm going to fuck you now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll stop it. Apparently, yeah, this is having the same effect on others that it had on me. Jude asking, genocide of our youth? Unbelievable, Bob. Or the Chuck Norris syndrome. That's exactly it. We're all going to be, we're all Chuck Norris now. Let's just get the end of this again.
Actually try to get away until you actually make sure that you've done some damage to him, because if you don't, then he'll just pursue you. So once you engage the gunman, you have to completely engage him until he's subdued.
What if there are two people? What do you do?
That's
if you've got a buddy in this, if you've got a teammate,
right?
What's the strategy?
Once we're hiding, let's say we couldn't run away and we hide, and then we realize that we might be discovered, we have to basically communicate with each other and say, listen, this is what's going to happen. If I grab the gun, you guys are going to tackle the person, but we all have to be in it together. We all all have to work together as a team
okay.
in order to subdue the individual.
Can you walk us through one step here, one thing that these kids would go through in your training to make
Absolutely.
Them feel more prepared?
Absolutely. So show Gabe's going to hold the gun and pretend that he's
going to hold the stapler.
And the way we would teach it is from the side. Eli, can you go to the side? And he would basically just practice taking the...
So this will be quick, about 10 seconds
before
we go.
You're right. He's going to practice getting me off the line of fire
okay.
and attacking the person.
Okay.
Right? And this is how we teach the kids
Excellent.
In the school.
That is so cool. I mean, he just walked up and, like, took dude's stapler away. And then, like, fake punched him in the face a couple of times. Why didn't we figure this out sooner? Of course, there are questions that attend this. Mm-hmm. One of the questions is, what happens when one of the little precious children gets shot? That's question one. Here's question two. Everything that the master here is teaching is contrary to everything that is taught in the schools, because what you have to do in an active shooter situation in an American school, because in American schools we have goddamned active shooter situations, what you have to do is you have to listen to the teacher. You have to do as you're told. Maybe you'll get out and maybe you'll go and hide under your Kevlar blanket, because we're selling those now. We really are. Or maybe you'll be enough of a small child that you'll hide behind your Kevlar backpack, because we're selling those too now, because we have active shooter situations in Merkin schools. Because freedom, because Second Amendment, because liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be no small amount of confusion when precious little Ninja Johnny goes to try to take away a gun, and it's been a lot easier taking away staplers. And that's going to mean that teacher then has to chase after Johnny, which means they're probably both going to get dead. Huh? Yeah? Right? Mm-hmm. Our buddy the Angry Indian notes, Brother Bob, this shit these freaks are saying and showing is fucking dangerous. This is being done for two primary reasons. One, nonsense like this scares people for no good reason. Two, the instructors are going to make a field day out of teaching this dangerous BS and engendering a new generation of wannabe Jack Bowers who feel that because the Bible and the GOP, they have a God-given right to kick ass and try taking an armed nutcase. I mean, what could possibly go wrong? The martial arts schools are going to go bananas over the newfound revenue coming in from this in the red states. Mm-hmm. Oh, and of course, the guy who's teaching this particular hustle, I will note, is a man of color, which made them all feel very, very good at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, because Elizabeth Hasselbeck didn't even look a little bit scared of him. And it means racism is over in America. See how that works? Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Jack in Shreveport, school guns, subject line. I thought next in your list was going to be for somebody like the parents to figure out who to sue. Well, you know, after they get done with the burying. Steve in New York says, at the end of this segment, Elizabeth Hasselbeck rants about how fucked up it is that we've gotten into this place, right? No, she doesn't. No. Because Merca. Steve also said, I honestly can't believe I'm hearing this. And that's, you know, we live in our little bubble. We're smart people. We don't watch Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. That's why I share clips like this. Because while we're busy being smart and not watching Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, there's lots of people who aren't smart enough not to do that, and they're being told that this is, you know, well, this makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. Brother Deacon Asa says, rushing the active shooter reminds me of one of your less frequently used Titanic Tuesday isms. Iceberg, full steam ahead. That's it. That's it. Hey, look, everybody. It's a guy with a gun. Let's all go get him. Okay, he's got a 100-round magazine. That means, okay, there's, what, 20 of us? Okay, so the worst that could happen is that, you know, one of us takes 100 rounds or each of us takes 5. But you know what? There'll probably be a survivor. Go! No takers? Asa continues, my best hope for the world is that these freaks take themselves out of the gene pool before they have a chance to wipe the rest of us out. One can only hope. And, well, you know what we say down here in the hills and hollers, Brother Deacon Asa. Hope in one hand and in the other and wait to see which one fills up first. And, of course, this is, dear God, it's an anniversary. It's another anniversary. I'm getting to, you know, you worry about missing your wedding anniversary because that can get you in some real, no. Agnes is very forgiving in that regard. We're just kind of happy we're still married every day. But no, it's a different anniversary today. Dear God, it's a different anniversary today. This is the anniversary of the slaughter of 20 little children and some adults. At Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. 3 years have gone by since then, and remember how that was supposed to be the teachable moment? I mean, that was when we were all going to realize, you know, we've got to do something about this. And we've done what? Absolutely goddamn nothing. Correct. Absolutely goddamn nothing. Because freedom. Because a bunch of pasty-faced, doughy, terrified white people wouldn't feel quite so American if we had a, if little six-year-old, more little six-year-olds got to be little seven-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And of course, because it's the anniversary of Sandy Hook, there are people, really, really, really sick people who think that Sandy Hook didn't happen and that it was carried out by crisis actors. And as mentioned, what, last week, week before, some of them, they have doxed the sister of one of the women who died there, one of the teachers. Here then, at 28 minutes past the hour, near the halfway mark of the evening's program, here then, the list of the real human beings who really, honest to God, died 3 years ago today because Mother Lanza was a gun goober who stockpiled firearms and took her bubble-off plum son, Adam, to the shooting range and taught him to use weapons as a means of helping him calm his aggressions. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't you have taken him to Taekwondo, Mother Lanza? Really, why couldn't you? Well, Mother Lanza's dead too because she was the first one he killed. Hear then the names. Let them be remembered. Somewhere, somehow, there's probably an internet link or a hop that involves a satellite. And that means something is beaming up to the satellite. That means it's beaming up into space. That means it's going to travel in discrete bits and pieces out into the universe and will travel for unknown amounts of time, just like the light coming from distant stars could well be coming from stars that have since burnt out and exist now as nothing but a cinder tearing at the fabric of space-time. But let the names be known that happened 3 years ago, because we can't do anything about the power that the bloodthirsty, sick, perverted, psychopathic National Rifle Association wields over our government. Charlotte Bacon, aged 6. Daniel Barden, aged 7. Olivia Engel, aged 6. Josephine Gay, aged 7. Anna Marquez Green, aged 6. Dylan Hockley, aged 6. Madeline Sue, aged 6. Catherine Hubbard, aged 6. Chase Kowalski, aged 7. Jesse Lewis, aged 6. James Mattioli, aged 6. Grace McDonnell, aged 7. Emily Parker, aged 6. Jack Pinto, aged 6. Noah Posner, aged 6. Carolyn Previti, aged 6. Jessica Recos, aged 6. Aviel Richman, aged 6. Benjamin Wheeler, aged 6. Allison Wyatt, aged 6. Rachel Davino, aged 29, a teacher. Dawn Hochsprung, aged 47, the school principal. Nancy Lanza, 52, Mother Lanza, mother of Adam. The genesis of it all in many ways. Anne Marie Murphy, aged 52, teacher. Lauren Rousseau, aged 30, teacher. Mary Sherlock, 56, school psychologist, and Victoria Soto, 27, teacher. The body of every child murdered on that day was shot, every child's body was shot multiple times. Those words, those names in white letters with their ages after them against a black background. They used to be little children who might have grown into young adults and citizens and mothers and fathers, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins. They might have reached a great age. They might have lived to see whether this country will save itself or go flailing down a path of denial toward its own demise. Who knows? One of those 20 children might have provided the solution to some of our problems, our pressing problems. But they will not. They will not. Meanwhile, because nothing says never again. Like a gun control quip from a right-wing evangelical fundamentalist on an anniversary like this. Representative Jeff Duncan, Republican of where else? Come on, the place where they sing Christmas carols with Klan hoods on their heads, South Carolina. Well, he got $10,500 from the National Republican Rifle Association. He got $2,000 for his 2016 reelection campaign. And he tweeted, I doubt France will respond by demanding more knife control. Talking about what happened, you know, the attacks in France. This did not go over well. One individual said, hell of a thing to say on the anniversary of the Sandy Hook tragedy, asswipe. Oh, knife control. Oh, okay, yeah. No. This was after a teacher claimed he was stabbed by a man shouting about the Islamic State. Yeah, I'm sorry. No, it wasn't about the attacks in France. It was one person stabbed with a knife. Another individual said, one injured, none dead. Compare that to mass shootings, dipshit. Another individual, show some class. You're a congressman. You're an embarrassment to the USA. And the Sandy Hook denial bunch, they've been out making their case today. There's a professor in the state of Florida who has made great hay out of Sandy Hook for the last 3 years. Florida Atlantic University professor James Tracy. Took to Facebook and said, the local conspirators in Newtown, such as the alleged parents of the murdered children, whew, right there, man, that's tough to get past, including Lenny and Veronique Posner, have made out very well financially, soliciting contributions from generous yet misinformed Americans, where the families have averaged more than $1 million apiece. Their son, Noah, is a very special boy because he has the distinction of dying twice, first at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut on December 14, 2012, then thousands of miles across the world at the Peshawar Army School shooting in Pakistan 2 years later on December 16, 2014. And the only proof Lenny has produced that Noah died in Sandy Hook is a death certificate he provided to one of the book's contributors, which has been revealed as a fabrication. If Noah actually died, there would have been no reason to fake it. Huh? Did you get that? If Noah actually died, there would be no reason to fake it. But they faked it, so he didn't die. So there was a reason to fake it, because he didn't die. Because if he died, there wouldn't have been a reason to fake it. The Posners, alas, are as phony as the drill itself, and profiting handsomely from the fake death of their fake son. Oh, okay. I'm sorry, the fake death of their son. And again, the question arises, what do you say about a country that has these people in it? What do you say about a country whose core constitutional values not only tolerate, but celebrate this kind of filth? Meanwhile, the Posners said, although many of these tormentors persecute us behind anonymous online identities, some do so openly and even proffer their professional credentials in an attempt to lend credence to their allegations. In this piece, and it was an op-ed published for the Sun Sentinel down in Florida, In this piece, we want to focus on someone who is chief among the conspiracy theorists, Florida Atlantic University Professor James Tracy. Tracy is among those who have personally sought to cause our family pain and anguish by publicly demonizing our attempts to keep cherished photos of our slain son from falling into the hands of conspiracy theorists. Tracy even sent us a certified letter demanding proof that Noah once lived, that we were his parents, and that we were the rightful owner of his photographic image. We found this so outrageous and unsettling that we filed a police report for harassment. Once Tracy realized we would not respond, he subjected us to ridicule and contempt on his blog, boasting to his readers that the unfulfilled request was noteworthy because we had used copyright claims to thwart continued research of the Sandy Hook massacre event. And under the skirts of the First Amendment, this monster, this somehow ambulatory pile of subhuman excrement, James Tracy. Well, he receives a paycheck from a publicly funded university. And, you know, this is not academic freedom we're talking about here. When I was subbing for Malloy on Friday evening, our buddy Flavio called in, and he asked the question, are there no limits on the First Amendment? And the obvious answer to that is, yes, of course, there are limits on the First Amendment. There always have been limits on the First Amendment. But we seem not to want to deal much with them anymore. Because we provide ourselves in this country with a fig leaf of some sort of respectability by saying, well, you know, you've got to put up with these kind of things if you want to have free speech. No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't. That is simply all that is a tort. All that is a civil wrong. That is the intentional infliction of emotional distress. And I cannot begin to think about the agony and the anguish that those families have lived with for yea, verily, and lo, these 3 years now. As I said, inside of a month, we've had two teen suicides here in our community. And it shocks you and rattles you all the way to the subcellular core of your being. I can't begin to imagine their agony. Well, why don't they sue them, Bob? I'm glad I asked. Because it's going to cost a fortune. And that sorry bastard doesn't have any assets worth recovering. And to give him a forum inside a court of law where, again, hiding behind the skirts of the First Amendment, a judge would probably be afraid to even limit the madness in which this sick freak can engage, well, it would just make the circus worse. The Posners and all the other families of the murdered children of Sandy Hook are in a trick box. They're in a puzzle box. And there are no right answers. He demanded photographic proof of the parents. What business has he making such a demand? And there's no way to stop it. There's no way for the parents to stop this filth. Just like when Ms. Soto's sister was doxxed the other day. And see, they all of these weird freaks claim that they've seen victims in other shootings. For instance, the Posner's child was killed in the school shooting in Peshawar, Pakistan, which didn't happen, they say. None of these things have happened. They're all just attempts to take away our precious loving guns, because children don't really get shot up into a million tiny pieces. It's just a false flag to take away our guns so the government can impose a new world order and Common Core and Agenda 21 and make us all eat Brussels sprouts forever. Sure, yeah, that's what it's about. Oh, that's it. That's what it's about. Don't you just know? But this is the country we live in. This is damned well the country we had best get used to living in. Oh, God, we were out today, and I saw my first Ben Carson sticker on a car here in almost level West by God, Virginia, Stan. I looked over at Ferg, and I said, hey, Ferg, look, there goes an idiot. Because it was. Because, see, you can't think Ben Carson, and look, I'm just plain about this. I speak plainly. You cannot think Ben Carson would make a good president of the United States and not be an idiot. Notice that those of us that want Bernie Sanders to be president, the best they can say, you're a bunch of communists. They don't call us idiots. But if you want Donald Trump to be president, or if you want mumbling Ben Carson to be president, or if you want, you know, the saner, moderate, more relatively calm and cool candidates like Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American, or Marco Rubio to be president, no, you're an idiot. There's no nuance. There's no shading of me. You're a goddamned idiot. There's something wrong with you. And if we could dig Dwight David Eisenhower up out of his grave, he would point his bony fingers at those people and say, you're idiots. And he was a Republican. But it's not, you know, it's not just Sandy Hook that causes people to torment other people. A black family moved into a home in a neighborhood in Maryland. And they have a neighbor, Sean Porter, who has, ever since they moved in, decorated his pick-em-up truck and his panel van and his motorcycle with Confederate flags and goes marching around with military-style semi-automatic assault weapons and shows, brandishes them in, points them and stuff when he's standing in the window in his house, threatens other people. One of the people in the family that moved in there and has been tormented every day since said he pulled a gun on some workers that were remodeling my bathroom because they parked in front of his house mistakenly thinking it was mine. And of course, these good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals, they're renting the home next door to where the folks moved in. There are pictures of them, the man and his son, wearing Confederate flag bandanas over their faces and waving Confederate flags and marching up and down in front of the yard with big signs promoting, oh, there he is, mumbling Ben Carson. And with signs of defund Planned Parenthood. And they've called 911, the family has. And the individual whose full identity has not been given because he's trying to protect himself and his family, he said, it's so bad that when I call 911, within 10 seconds, the dispatcher cuts me off and says, I already know what you're calling about. Almost like Colorado Springs when the guy, or Denver, when the when they Colorado Springs, when the guy just went walking down the street and somebody called 911 and said there's a guy with an assault rifle walking down the street, and he looks real agitated and stuff. And, well, that's his right. He can be agitated with a big old murderous military style weapon. This is Merca. Because in Merca, you can just harass the living hell out of your neighbor, and that's freedom. You ever get the idea that we've got a skewed idea of what freedom means? Because I think we do. Hey, let's run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
New caller here.
Yay. Who have I got?
This is Nick in Minnesota.
Well, Nick, welcome aboard.
Well, thank you very much. I just figured I should call since we got the... You know, a lot of the times you're talking, all about all the morons and hillbilly morons and southern morons and
we don't have a lock, do we, Nick?
We got the only thing of it is the more and more I realize they're all over the place, and we got our fair share up here too, because. I was just thinking we had the trifecta here in Sunday at the my local Target. We call it the Target since
yes, of course we do. We do as well down here. It's the upscale place we go when we don't feel like going to Wally World.
The guy had his freedom protector went off as he was in the line to. Check out, and nobody got hurt, but the gun went off and hit the floor and bounced up and hit the ceiling, and he took off. So the surveillance camera, they got it, a picture of him, but he just walked out, and all the customers and the checkout people just had their mouths open like freedom, right?
So he just walked away?
What's that?
He just
walked right out of the store, said, well, I guess it's time to leave. They're looking for the guy, and he's with a woman. They got the woman had a love pink T-shirt on or sweatshirt on, and he had his baseball cap on and stuff, but that was one leg, and then the second leg, of course, is we had the white racist guys shooting at the Black Lives Matter protest deal a couple of
weeks ago. Yep.
And then we had the lady at the Applebee's that didn't like the Somali lady with the headgear speaking Swahili, so she decided to take a beer mug and wrap her beer mug against the lady's face and give her the 17 stitches. And
Jesus,
don't you be coming into our Applebee's and not be speaking English.
Talking American.
Yeah, you got to talk American, exactly. So, we got our fair share of, I don't know what the heck's going on. I really don't, but, yeah.
So, well, I've had reports, Nick, of even Confederate flags being flown up there in Minnesota, which just blows my mind.
It kind of blew my mind on that on that Black Lives Matter thing that, you know, let's go and break up the protest there. We don't like these black guys standing around the fourth precinct, you know, blocking traffic or whatever. So we'll take our freedom protectors and straighten it out so people can cross the street without being you know, shoulder to shoulder with the protesters, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I've read this stuff. And what the hell ever happened to Minnesota Nice?
Exactly. I mean, it wasn't like they were really causing much of a disturbance from what I could figure out, but we'll take our guns and make sure that we can walk across the street without them, I guess. I don't know what they were thinking. Apparently one of them was actually worked as a police officer, I think, not in the Minneapolis, but was training to be one, I guess. I don't know, in southern Minnesota, but.
Because Minnesota is justly famous for its friendliness and its community-ness and its, you know, hi neighbor, how are you-ness, and Is there a general response of, oh my God, why is this happening here?
I'm afraid that there might not be as much as I would have thought. I don't know. It's a good question.
Because if Minnesota, I mean, I'm sorry, you guys are the canary in the coal mine.
The next thing that's going to be happening would be happening in Canada, right? I mean, yeah, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, when Canada gets hateful, it's over.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying is, I guess we're way closer to being in Alabama than we are being in Canada. We might be next to Canada, but I'm thinking we're closer to being in,
well, you're certainly having
Alabama than we are to being next to Canada.
You're certainly having some Alabama weather right now, aren't you?
yes, we are.
I mean, shouldn't you be up to your shins in snow by about now?
Yeah. It was just raining today. That's all. I think we might actually get an inch of snow or something by Tuesday night. But
yeah, and it'll be 50 degrees, and it'll all be gone by the next day.
Yeah. I don't know. It's been a crazy thing, but yeah, I'm a letter carrier, so I listen to your shows usually. I've been listening to your show's podcast at work, and I always have to be careful going door to door when the cussing goes. When angry's on, I'm like right close to the volume. That's for sure. Put down the volume because I
mute.
Because it's like the customers are like, well, he ain't listening to any regular sports radio, there is he?
No, sorry, this isn't Jim Rome. No, yeah,
right,
no, not at
right.
all. Well, Nick, it's awful good to hear from you. That's another thing. I love knowing what people are doing while they're listening to the program.
Yeah,
so I mow grass with Dennis in Kentucky, and we deliver the mail with Nick in Minnesota.
Right. It's fabulous, and I'll do it by mail, but I'll have to send you some coin because it's definitely worth. It's like you say, it's for 17 cents. It's right. Comes out to be, if you donated $10 a month, it'd be 17 cents an hour. Is that
actually less?
Okay, so, right. So it's definitely worth the 17 cents because not having the commercials and coming in crystal clear. I was listening to Stephanie Miller, and I couldn't take her because she's too pro Hillary for me, and and the commercials, and even, you know, listening to Tom Hartman with his commercials, plus the radio, it's staticky with the AM signal and everything like that, and just easier with you. That's all.
Well,
one thing I was thinking about that would be really nice would be to have to be able to have like Bill O'Brien on, Dr. Bill on, like TuneIn or something, because then I could listen to it, you know, without Wi-Fi, you know. I don't think I can listen to him without Wi-Fi.
The horns, the live stream for the horn in the afternoons, we've got a 12K dial-up modem stream.
Uh-huh.
So it requires very, very little bandwidth. I mean,
okay.
Like
I say, with a podcast, you know, I just do it with the podcast.
Well, I mean, he's got a podcast.
I don't even have to worry about that.
Yeah, he's got a podcast.
But I think his podcast, I'm not sure. I'll try it. I don't think his podcast will work for me, because I don't think I can download it and continue it without the Wi-Fi going.
Oh, okay. Well, let me know back. I'd like to know the answer to that question, Nick.
Okay.
I really, really would.
Okay, I'll give it a try. I'll give it a try and see what happens. I'm not sure how that would work.
Okay, well, just let me know. I would appreciate it.
In my previous life, I was a PhD student in political science. That's how I ended up in Minnesota. I'm actually from New Jersey, so
I think you've been there long enough for the accent to rub off a little bit, Nick.
Yeah. I was from Western New Jersey, so I never really had the full flung like New York type accent.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Not the what exit kind of thing. No, right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good hearing from you.
After the Sandy Hook thing, I figured I'd give you a little bit lighter deal, even though the Somalian woman doesn't feel that it was. Lighter with her, you know, stitches in her face.
No, not so
like
light.
That and the whole.
Not so light. I really wouldn't.
I'm really nervous about the story is like how the Islamic people are like really worried about their, you know, well-being, that they can't even feel safe going to a restaurant to have dinner. And, we have, a big Somalian immigrant in our area. And the closest school to me is an Islamic school. Like, it's right across the street from a Catholic high school too. So,
yeah, and let me guess, it's the name of it is not Death to America Islamic School, is it?
I wouldn't think that it is.
Yeah, exactly. Not that you could explain that to a Trump supporter.
I'm just worried for their, well-being too. It's nice to have the white privilege of not worrying about your ass at all times, like they must have to worry about theirs, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. And perceptive of you to note it. Well, Nick, have a great evening. I hope this will not be our last conversation. I hope it will be the first of many.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bob.
Take care now.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Yay, new caller. And you know what? See how easy it is? You have no idea the number of people that listen to this program and have never picked up the phone and have never called. There was an old statistic a million years ago that said something like, for every one person who calls a radio program, there are somewhere between 100 and 1,000 who are too terrified to try. That goes hand in hand with the old statistic that said that on the list of people's fears, death was the thing that was the second most morbid fear that most human beings have. Public speaking in public was number one.
Well, one of the things that we've tried to do over the last 10 years is make this a comfortable place for people to speak their minds and engage in real conversation. I hope we have. And it sounds, you know, when we hear from people like Nick, we have. Ray in Florida pointing out, speaking of, I can hear you fine on TuneIn now. Yay! Yay, indeed. Couple of notes. We'll take a break in a minute. A couple of notes. Steve in New York says, no more waffling. I'm moving to Canada. I don't want to live here anymore after this. I'll let you know when I move. Steve, I won't blame you. Agnes and I have that conversation, something approaching constantly. Where can you goddamn go? That's in the United States. And the answer is nowhere. Because the thing is, it's that whole thing, that old saw about, you know, a chain being only as strong as its weakest link. And this entire country is comprised of weak links. Because there are a bunch of states out there that don't really, you know, that don't really want to be part of the United States that much. They're just kind of, it's like a relationship, you know, it's too much trouble getting divorced. We'll just gut it out. Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia. Oh, look, the Confederacy, you know, with add-ins like Idaho and Arizona and Texas, Missouri, yeah, Kansas, right? And speaking of Kansas, a note coming in from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan. Subject line, after reading about, after sharing the reading of the names of the children of Sandy Hook. Subject line, the children. Diane writes, if we're going to expect a person much younger, and this goes back to the clip from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda about how they're supposed, you know, it's just like taking a stapler away from your teacher. If we are going to, by the way, once we teach all these little ninjas to be, to disarm bad people, what happens when they start using, what happens if one of them turns his ninja skills to the dark side? Yeah. Wait a minute, that's not a good Vader at all. That's not a good, no, wait, we're good.
Luke. Take the stapler.
That's better. What happens when one of these little ninjas turns his powers to the dark side? That's my question. So, Diane asks if we are going to expect a person much younger than the age of majority to do what was just described, then, by God, we would owe them a radical Bill of Rights beyond anything that the right wing could imagine. Those children would deserve all sorts of new rights under a new social contract. What I'm saying is that if they are mature enough to try to disarm a gunman waving an automatic weapon, if that is what we expect of them, then they would be old enough to design their own curriculum, hire their own teachers, sit on the Board of Education, and, you know, so much more.
How about vote? Sure. And by the way, I've never seen a semi-automatic stapler. That thing rose to the level of being as dumb as the Monty Python skit was funny about what if someone attacks you with a banana. You remember that one.
I mean, couldn't we try something else like a pointed stick?
A pointed stick. No.
How does a child... Do you know? Maybe you don't. I mean, we don't have a lot. Maybe we don't have a lot of gun owners in the Horn Family Commune congregation. But we got a lot of folks who were raised on farms, country areas, rural areas. Do folks have an idea? Does Elizabeth Hasselbeck have any idea what the weight of an AR-15 is, or an AK-47. Any idea? Because you know what? That child who said, you know, I'm just ready because I know it's going to happen someday, that child would probably be a little bit challenged just by the weight alone of a semi-automatic military-style assault rifle.
But that's okay, because pistols are just, you know, and you know, hell, a pistol itself, a pistol weighs more than a stapler, okay? So Diane, this is such a trenchant observation on her part, which is why she is, in fact, the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansastan. If we're going to ask children to rush shooters, then we're going to owe them a whole hell of a lot more than anything they're getting from us right now.
Yeah, well, you know what? We can train them how to fight off an attacker, and we will have given them everything they deserve by giving them the skills they need to survive in Merca.
Diane says, I'm not kidding, and I know you're not, Diane, and you're absolutely right. And then this, a poignant little thing that Jack noted. Subject line, Sandy Hook. You know, most of those children whose names you read would have said 6 1/2. That's important at that age. How old are you, son?
6 1/2?
I can remember. Because my parents' wedding anniversary was on July 1st, and July 1st was also my half-birthday. So after July 1st, I got to say, 6 1/2? Yeah, I sniffled a little bit when I read that, Jack. That's so true. That half year matters. It is important at that age.
We are 11 minutes into the third hour, and we are $190 away from the fundraising goal for this evening. Probably still a little bit behind from last week, but just not going to count. But we're $190 away from this evening's goal. And remember, everybody who contributes this evening goes into the hat for the exquisite, beautiful Native American portrait turkey feather drawing afterwards. Just a little incentive, that's all. Hey, look! It's none other than the Queen of the Minions. It's Carol Baker.
Why, yes, it is.
Well, good evening.
Well, good evening.
Well, good evening to you, sir. Is my sound all right? Because I know occasionally I do echo back.
You are echoing.
You are echoing.
Okay.
Actually, I'm echoing.
Okay, then when I'm not talking, I'll mute my mic. And this, I'm going to make this real quick.
Okay.
Okay.
This weekend, or yesterday, the Huffington Post, you know, they put up 1,000 things a day. They put up this post that, you know, has-been actor Kurt Russell says, gun control won't deter terrorists. What are you going to do? Outlaw everything? So, I said, gun safety laws aren't designed to deter terrorists. They're designed to deter idiots with guns who think they can combat terrorism with their arsenals and only end up killing innocent bystanders. It's supposed to deter religious Christian zealots who believe it's their God-given duty to shoot up a Planned Parenthood and take hostages. It's supposed to deter morons who leave their guns unsecured where children can get at them. It's supposed to deter bigger morons who think it's perfectly all right to shoot a shoplifter, endangering the lives of everyone in the vicinity. What are you going to do, outlaw everything? Everything doesn't kill people. Morons with guns kill people. I laid down to take a nap, and when I woke up, there were 184 trolls waiting for me.
No kidding.
I'm not kidding.
You hate freedom, Carl Baker. Why do you hate Jesus and guns?
It got even better. It was like, you know, I just started dismantling them one by one, just because occasionally I get in that mood. And it was like, you stupid bitch, you whore, you hate America. And I was like, well, I'm not stupid. I think the rest of it was just a lucky guess, but and that just makes them insane when you talk to them like that.
Oh, it absolutely does. And sometimes it can be fun. I don't have it in me anymore, unfortunately, but it can be fun.
Most of the time I don't, but I have to tell you, that the liberals that were sitting on the sidelines were watching this all go on, and I was getting this flood of private messages going, he just took an old lady ass whooping. That's so funny.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's good.
But it's shit like, well, if we're going to make laws about guns, then we're going to need to make us some laws about cars because they kill people. I was like, look, when they're advertising the Chrysler Concord, they're not 0 to 60 in 5.4 seconds. And let me tell you, it'll knock your ex-husband's dick in the dirt if you run over him 4 or 5 times.
No, they don't do that.
They don't do that.
That's not the purpose of a car. It's to get you from point A to point B. We're going to have to regulate fists. We already do regulate fists, how you can use them. So piss off. Next. You're dismissed. It went on like this for like 8 hours yesterday. And it was kind of fun, I admit.
But by the same token, aren't they? They're time vampires, aren't they? Aren't they, Carol? They just suck time away from you.
True enough, but it was a nice learning. It was sort of like a workshop for liberals on how to talk to trolls.
A little master class, perhaps?
I made some new friends, let's put it that way.
Oh, goody. Maybe you could encourage them to come over here and play with us.
Well, I friended a few of them, so, and since I post a show promo every night, I'm hoping a few of them will get the hint.
Just a nudge. But you know, something you said a minute ago reminded me of the things that I've dealt with in my past. That business about, you know, well, cars kill people too, and that's how they all talk, because it's like the weight of their brow ridge holds down their palate, or so, I don't know. But I remember we would go to mountaintop removal actions and protests. And there would always be some guy, and by the way, he's unemployed now, and the coal company is trying to bankrupt their way out of paying him his 401k. And but he'd be standing there going, do you drive a car? You drive a car, don't you? I mean, why do you hate coal? Because you drive a car. You want to freeze to death in the dark? And they think they're so goddamn clever for coming up, and I just look at him and go, well, Cephas, I tell you what, I know you didn't come up with that by yourself. Who told you to say that? And that would just get them so, they'd get even madder.
Well, it's like nowhere in what I said was I calling for a total prohibition on guns. And it just proved to me, I said, it was those gun laws are designed to deal with morons with guns. And 184 of them pointed themselves out.
Well, exactly, because and they're the same ones I was talking about when I said, if you ask them, you know, if you knew that giving up your guns would save one child's life, would you?
No,
you can't get. Well, they won't answer it. Some of them will be ballsy enough to say, well, no, I wouldn't, because freedom. Because what am I going to do when the jackbooted government puts its jackbooted jackboot down on my neck right next to my Confederate flag tattoo and that line about only God can judge me?
But it's, I just don't understand this thing where we let 20-some kids die and we sit on our hands and do nothing because we can't afford to purchase our own congressmen.
Well, sure. I don't know if you saw it or not, Carol, but there was one of those wonderful pieces from The Onion where The Onion verges over way too close to reality. And I forget the exact headline, but it was something like, Koch brothers have merry moment when they realize they've each bought that they have bought each other the same congressman for Christmas.
I saw that, and it was funny.
And it's also true. It is also true. There's another one out there, though. I know you said you're going to hop right off, but I'm not going to let you. There's another one out there that I saw. A couple of people sent it to me, and I tried really hard to think that this was not real, okay?
Are you talking about sucking up all the sun?
Yes.
Yes.
How'd I know?
Well, did the same thing happen to you? I mean, possibly be real.
Oh, I posted, I talked about it, and somebody accused me of appealing to the lowest form of comedy and satire. And I was like, I hate to break it to you, Hoss, but this isn't The Onion, and this originally appeared in this newspaper. It is, like, real. These people believe this.
And for those who don't know, what this is that some folks showed up at a town meeting to voice their opposition to a solar farm being put in near them. And one of the complaints was, it'll suck up all the energy from the sun.
And kill all the plants.
And all the plants will die. Because I've not, and that was a science teacher. That was the part that got me. And you're killing your town. All the young people are going to move out, you know, if you have the solar energy.
And do you know what they're voting on at the city council meeting in Independence, Missouri tonight?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
No, they're voting on whether or not to build a solar farm at the junction of 291 and Salisbury Road, where there's huge unincorporated area of farm fields for sale. The city wants to buy it and put up a huge solar farm to make the city energy independent.
And they're going to show up, I guess, with what, pitchforks and torches? I mean, the booger out there. I mean, it's like here, it's like other places. The booger eaters you have always with you.
I think the city is serious about this, and they're getting growing support. I was shocked. I was shocked because my personal energy company said that if I put solar panels on my house, then I'm going to end up paying more money because they're going to penalize me for it.
Oh. So, I mean, is there anybody organized saying, yay, build the solar farm?
Yeah, they're saying build the solar farm in Independence. Who knew that, you know, 40 miles away, you go from stump to reality?
It's not going to affect the well-being of the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Park and Country Club, is it?
Also known as the Burning Cross Trailer Park. No, it won't affect them at all.
I didn't know they did that, too. I thought it was just the ballerinas and the Swan Lake.
Well, you know, there's holidays to be, you know, celebrated.
Oh, I know. Jefferson Davis's birthday comes but once a year, but there's also Robert E. Lee's.
One final piece of news I want to share with you.
Do please.
Ted Cruz is asking his supporters to help Scott Walker pay off his 2016 campaign debt.
And why?
Well,
I mean, I guess Ted wants the goggle-eyed homunculus's endorsement.
No, it's just that, you know, they're you know, compadres, they're brothers from another mother, and you know, his bro's in trouble here.
Is Ted a giver?
Well, that's a loaded question, but here was my answer, was that would just be socialism. Scott Walker needs to pull himself up by his bootstraps.
Damn Skippy.
Why did he campaign beyond his means? What kind of a lesson would that be if we all bailed him out? It would just teach him that he can rack up debt running for a public office for which he's grossly underqualified, because we'll just come bail him out. Sorry, Scott, Ted. Bootstraps, men. Bootstraps.
I mean, we don't want him laying in that public assistance hammock now, do we?
That would just be wrong.
Because, you know, I mean, that's how it is. If you feed the strays, they just hang around and they're not strays anymore. And then they have more strays.
Time to pick up the kiddie bowl.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, now, did I understand you right? You got so much rain yesterday that it would have been 26 inches of snow?
Yes, they said that if it had been cold enough and it had snowed, we would have had 26 inches of snow. The lake's high.
Jesus.
I filled two 5-gallon buckets.
Go ahead.
I filled two 5-gallon buckets. Because, you know, I mean, I capture all the water I can to conserve.
Sure, absolutely. We do the same thing. But 26, oh, that's serious. That's a lot of rain.
A lot of rain.
Well, Bob, it was...
Does Lake Hooterville ever get out of its banks?
No. It's a man-made lake, and the way that they've done it is that we've got a spillway, we've got a whole bunch of stuff that kind of takes care of all that. I mean, I've had the water come 4 feet up into my yard and pretty much cover the dock, but probably within 6 hours, it's at a reasonable level.
Well, that at least is a relief.
Yeah, my house is always safe.
Good.
But it was about 6 years ago, we had a blizzard come through here. We got 28 inches of snow, which has never happened here.
And that's the key to climate change. You know, it's not so much that it's going to be all of one thing or all of another. It's the much more wild and erratic swings, and kind of looks that way, doesn't it?
Only every day. We slept, Saturday night, we slept with the house wide open, all the windows and doors wide open, and it was humid. It was muggy yesterday morning when I woke up.
Yeah, so just sticky and gross.
I knew what you were talking about. And at about 8 o'clock last night, the wind shifted, and it started blowing, and the temperature dropped like 25 degrees in about an hour. And then today it only got up to about 42. Tomorrow it's supposed to be 60. Next day, 42. And it's like, I'm just hacking my brains out because my body doesn't know what to do.
No, it's crazy. It's crazy stuff because Agnes set us up for winter. She, you know, got the down comforter out and everything because, you know, there's nothing better than, I mean, the way I like things is, you know, the room's kind of cool, and so you're all warm and snuggly under the covers.
Here, too.
Right. And that way, when you get up in the morning, it's kind of bracing, and you're like, oh, shit, I'm awake. And so she did that. And we're flinging covers off last night. And 7 o'clock this morning, I'm like, honey, please, turn on the AC. Because that's her side of the bed. And we were drenched. Just, you could squeeze the air and pull water out of it. And some rains came this afternoon. And, yeah, it cooled down a little bit, but I'm still in shirt sleeves. And I'm one step away from Bermuda shorts.
Wait till tomorrow. We have flash flood watches all up and down the Missouri River Valley.
Let's see. Tomorrow's high 55, Wednesday's high 64, Thursday 55, Friday 37, Saturday 39, and then Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week, 52, 55, 63. Wednesday, Christmas Eve is 66.
It's beginning to look a lot like Easter.
Yeah, the damn ramps will be up any minute.
The flower bulbs are already confused.
Are they? The tulips are kind of going, should we? Really? Should we? Yeah, let's do it. No. Amazing.
Amazing.
Oh, we have a note from Ron in the Unfrozen North. Bitch. Not in the pejorative sense, of course. I also think Ron went Christmas tree shopping this evening, which has got to be strange in short pants in Canada in December.
I'd imagine it is.
I've been trying to do something from a Christmas standpoint because it's around here. It's hard to get Christmassy. It really does. It kind of screws with you. It's hard to get Christmassy when it feels like the 4th of July. And so I'm going to go out and try to find, because I'm not crazy about fake trees, and I don't like the idea of, you know, spending $50 on a tree that's already dead. And so I'm going to try to find a little tree with a root ball on it, and put it in a wash tub or something with some water just to keep the root ball moist, decorate it, and then after it's all over, we'll go out and we'll dig a hole and plant it in the front yard or something. But that seems a little more fun.
I have the advantage of being single. I can just hang up one of those little tree air fresheners and sing something.
Oh, you know, well, and for all the rest of her days, Carol Baker knew how to keep Christmas in her heart. God
and
bless
Cat
us,
Stevens
everyone.
Out of a real tree.
Oh, there's that. Yeah, right. Yeah. God. Oh, I bet Mushu would be into it. Oh, yeah. But that's the nice thing about the root ball. It keeps it from tipping over. But still kitties climbing Christmas trees, absolutely.
Yeah, it would have no chance. I'm not that stupid. Usually on Christmas Eve, I've got a friend who passed away some years ago had given me this beautiful big ceramic, one of those ceramic Christmas trees that has all the lights on it, that you just flip the switch. And I love that thing. And Cat Stevens tries to knock it over.
Just sits there and bats it.
Because he's a little bastard.
Who stayed out all night the other night?
He got grounded, and let me tell you something. He spent 2 days being so angry at me, he wouldn't sleep with me. He laid across the other side of the room and glared at me. And last night was the first night that he actually came and got in bed with me, because the door was open and he'd been out. So I was forgiven.
Are you getting, you were getting the kitty stink eye, though?
Oh, man. He's good at it. He's really good at it. And worse, he turns the dog against me because they're like this little, you know, gang, this little hillbilly gang.
Oddly enough, we have a kitty gang around here. It was started by a cat that started here and decided to absent herself from the proceedings. And she went out and formed a kitty gang. Come around and sing the songs of their people to Agnes from time to time. we're going to take a little break, and I'm looking here, and I'm trying to find the right bumper song to close out a Carol Baker Queen of the Minions segment. So I think I got it.
If you play She's a Bitch, I'm coming for you.
No. This is going to be even better.
This is too good.
Let's see. Hang on. Here we go. This is Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back. You see what I mean, Carol?
You're awesome.
Later.
I'm looking
later.
For a hard-headed woman.
One who'll take me for myself. And if I find my hard-headed woman, I won't need nobody else. No. I'm looking for a hard-headed woman, headed woman. One who will make me do my best. And if I find my hard-headed woman, I know the rest of my life will be blessed. Yes. I know a lot of fancy dancers, people who can glide you on the floor. They move so smooth but have no answers. When you ask what you come here for,
I don't know
why. Thank you. sure. Yes, yes, yes. I'm looking for a hard-headed, warm-headed woman. One who will make me do my best. And if I find my hard-headed woman,
now, see, I'm proud of that. I'm just proud of that. Cat Stevens, hard-headed woman, and Carol tells me by message that Cat Stevens is looking pretty proud of himself in the middle of my desk. So we have only 20... where does the time go? We have only 24 minutes to go in the program. If you've got anything, burr under your saddle, bee under your bonnet, whatever... don't let it fester. That stuff's not good to keep bottled up. Go ahead, dial in. You know the numbers, 304-574-8178, and that's via line one. Also, Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn. And then, of course, there's the Stress Line, named in memory of Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, 304-663-4676, 304-663-4676. Note coming in from Roger in the Great Northwest. Wind talking for Carol. Just want to make sure I'm hearing you guys correctly. You don't mind us on the West Coast blowing you kisses, but you're not fans of the big wet ones. Precisely. There's too much cleanup. Roger also noted, outlaw stupidity. When they outlaw stupidity, only criminals will be stupid. Oddly enough, I think the same thing applies to the Second Amendment. When guns are outlawed, only morons will have guns, or what, something like that, yeah. And then Steve from Vermont says, just a thought, it would be a small percentage of Trump supporters that could even hear Bernie's message. I still hold out that the culture of coercion and violence can be softened through some kind of truth and reconciliation process, but a good-paying job might work just as well. Bernie is the anti-Trump. For me, Hillary's a manufactured product, and I don't trust her, especially keeping the U.S. out of unnecessary wars. Uh-huh. And forging ahead in a progressive direction. Oh, I share all of that, Steve. And there's just some stuff we have to come to terms with. Even if I do the whole hold my nose, put the clothespin on my nose and the bag over my head and go into the voting booth and vote for Hillary in November, I know what I'm getting. Oh yes, I know what I'm getting. I got to thinking about it. The fight for $15, the $15 an hour movement. Well, if you take, a 40-hour week at the $12 an hour that Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton says we can afford. We can't afford 15, but we can afford 12. Working people don't deserve any damn $15 an hour. They deserve 12 for minimum wage. That's it. No more. Even though the 1961 minimum wage, 1960 minimum wage, brought up to $2,015 would be $22 an hour. Never mind. Shut up. But I got to figuring. So by saying $12 an hour, Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton is saying that American workers supporting families on minimum wage are not even worth $100 a day. Because $12 an hour, 40 hours a week, is $480. It's 5 days, not worth $100 a day. Oh my God! It's the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas. Stan, Diane, how are you?
Hi, Bob. I'm fine, and you?
Pretty good, I think. Pretty good.
Well, the bumper music was a stroke of genius.
Oh, thank you.
Really, the Cat Stevens and the whole thing was really good, and And then you invited us if we had a thorn in our side, even though it's, who it is today? Oh, yeah, Moran Monday. You invited us if we had something festering to call in. And so that's why I'm calling in. And it has to do with Kansastan. And there's two things. We are getting ready to have concealed carry here on campus in 2017. I know. So, I mean, the law has been in place since 2012, but the universities and colleges in Kansas have had a dispensation of sorts in the interim. But that time has run out. So now, in the summer of 2017, we will have concealed carry on campus. However, we do have working groups going to the Board of Regents and arguing for some policy revisions, whatever that means. I don't know. Anyway. So none of us are thrilled about that. And I had a student in my office today taking his final early, and, you know, I asked him, young man, just I thought he might be representative of the students, or maybe not. But I asked him, what did he think of that? And, you know, he paused, and he said, well, he goes, you know, there's a lot of alcohol involved with kids.
and colleges, maybe? I mean, colleges.
Yeah, I mean, out of the mouths of babes, you know? I mean, that was the first thing on his mind is there's too much liquor on campus to be doing such a thing. I don't know. Anyway, so that's something that's in our future. And then the other thing I wanted to share with you and the Horn listeners is that I don't know if you remember, but I was pretty happy about Thomas Frank's visit to Kansas.
Oh, absolutely. I do remember.
Had a good time. And I don't know. I love abstract reasoning. So when I'm in the presence of someone who does that stuff really well and mixes it in with a lot of good irony and a populist bent, you know, I'm just real happy because it's like playground, you know?
Yeah, that's not word salad. That's word casserole.
I'm sorry, Bob?
I said that's not word salad, that's word casserole.
Yeah, it's a playground. Well, you know, you're a wordsmith and you deal in thought experiments and then some. But what we did on that committee, I should remind people who are listening that that's a committee at Kansas State University that we bring in progressive speakers. I mean, they're progressive. We don't mess around. And I'm on that committee who chooses them and then hosts them and et cetera, et cetera. So we did this thing. It was really the chair of the committee who had a stroke of genius. We brought in Thomas Frank in October, and then in November, we brought in the former budget director of Kansas. He had served under two Republican governors and one Democratic governor, and he also won a national award for state budget director. I didn't even know they had such a thing. But anyway, I thought it was really cool because we brought in Thomas Franks of What's the Matter with Kansas to address what's the matter with Kansas and kind of with an update. And then the next thing, we bring in the budget director to comment on that level of what's going on in Kansas. You know, and, oh, my God, that one hurt, Bob, because it wasn't abstract. You know how it is. You look at the numbers and you think of people not eating, and it's no longer abstract.
No, it becomes concrete in a hurry.
Yeah, and I was, his name is Dwayne Gosin. I've got a thing up on my LinkedIn page, actually, of his. We videotaped him, of course. We do it for all the lectures. And they asked me to introduce them to the audience. So I was really honored to do the introduction. And I guess kind of not only told the crowd who he was, but also led with ABC had announced a couple days earlier that the projections for revenue in Kansas were way off by multi-billion dollars, you know, multi-billion dollar deficit, so surprise. So I kind of led with, you know, that's in the news, and Mr. Gosin is going to explain how we got to this place. And I also threw in that he would address what's happening to the highway fund and doing so in a state that, you know, gave the country Dwight Eisenhower, and the Highway Act was enacted under his administration. So I just had to get a kind of comment in about, I wonder what Dwight Eisenhower would say about what's happening to the highway fund in Kansas. But anyway, this Dwayne Gosin was just exquisite, down to earth in how he presented the budget, made it come alive. But I've just been not clinically depressed ever since, but my God, is it ever a mess? Because this time around, see, he showed us clearly there are just two pies for the budget. One is the highway fund, and we've already robbed it. We've gone into every piggy bank of the highway fund and taken it. You know, not us, the idiot in Topeka and company. You know, we've robbed any cash balances anywhere. And so, for instance, I read that there were like 1,200 highway projects that were supposed to be worked on this year, and the state can only afford to do, I don't know, I don't remember the exact number, 50, you know?
Yeah.
It's just really pathetic, because Kansas claims to be the first state to break ground in the Interstate Highway Act that Dwight Eisenhower signed into law, and we've been very proud of our highway system. So anyway, so that's one pie, and it's not only been robbed, it's been robbed to subsidize other areas that we just can't cover. So the one pie for revenue is a highway fund. Well, can't do any more damage to that. The other pie is the general fund, and of that, like 90% is for education. Oh, my God. I mean, and the state won't take Medicaid, you know, that old thing.
Right, right, yeah. Well, you've been looted.
Yeah, and so the only place really to, I don't know, you get the picture. I mean, the primary and secondary schools are, that's where the action's going to be. We're kind of protected at the university somewhat. We only get 20% of our revenue from the state. Of course, that still has consequences, because Kansas State has already closed one lab. You know, there will be consequences. But what really broke my heart is when he used PowerPoints, when he put up a table and he showed, here's who's paying the taxes. And it showed the very poor, you know, it showed the very, very poor, and the very poor, they're paying more taxes. That's who's paying more taxes. In dollar amounts, and then you go on to the other end of the spectrum, the rich, and they're getting all this money back. And so it just broke my heart. You know, it just broke my heart to see that.
Well, and anybody who values civil government, who values the idea of a functioning state, it is heartbreaking, Diane.
It's just heartbreaking. And the interesting thing, and, you know, this is what I like to do with the discretion I have as a professor. I want to be part of who brings this genius budget director who's worked for two Republican governors and one Democratic governor, and he's now senior fellow at a research foundation. You know, if the discretionary time I have, this is where it's going. So, I mean, on a personal level, it's just kind of a coping strategy, you know what I mean? Like, I can do something. This is something I can do. And but another interesting thing is we took Mr. Gosin out for dinner beforehand, three of us, with a former two-term governor of Kansas, John Carlin, a Republican. It's just so interesting. And some... Also, the lecture was well attended.
But he wasn't one of those wild-eyed governors, was he?
No. I think the moderate Republicans here are really Democrats. Really, seriously. The more I get.
Well, they're not welcome amongst the teabaggers anymore.
Oh, well, that's the point. I mean, that's certainly true. But it's so interesting to hear, you know, to be in the presence of someone, Kansas elected twice for governor, Republican, who just very calmly talks about the situation we're in. I mean, and not admiringly, I don't want to speak for the gentleman. He's not on the phone here, but I'm just saying, you can't find anyone who really thinks it's going well here. So anyway, that's what, and I don't want to make a big deal of this, but they've never had a business professor on the steering committee before. And so I wonder when they asked me to introduce it, I thought, well, you know, I have a regents level, state level chair of distinction. It's just kind of from the business, and I'm a business professor. And it's like, I thought it was just kind of interesting they chose me to introduce it when they have a Marxist English professor sitting there, a political science professor on the committee. I mean, and both would have been, of course, excellent and are excellent. But I don't know, there was just something ironic about a business professor. Maybe unexpected, but it's what I'm going to do. So, you know. Yeah, you know, yeah. It's just a little.
Well, I have a question coming from Ron in the Unfrozen North.
Hi, Ron.
Regarding the concealed carry there on campus.
Oh God.
He says, "I would be tempted to ask if any of the teaching staff, the professorial staff, are willing to resign on principle." He says it would present an interesting conundrum for the university administration and offer a perfect opportunity for the teaching staff to demonstrate that the university would be up the creek if the teaching staff and a decent proportion of the students, the student body, basically said, hell no, we won't go.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering as the date gets closer. We've already had 100 professors sign on in protest. One play would be in faculty senate, you know. We'll have to see. I don't really know. I mean, here's the way it's probably going to work out. And it's a good question, Ron, and it's a good idea. But here's what's probably going to happen. Someone like me may just decide to take another job offer, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're out there and I don't have to be here. I should be while my mother's still living. That's what brought me here. But, you know, I mean, there are these decisions of people who will decide. It may affect their decision to apply here. It may affect some decisions to stay here. I really don't know. I don't know. But what Ron is suggesting is that they see our backs. That might just be what I don't know. I was going to say that might be what they want, but I don't think it is what they want. I think they just want guns everywhere. But they think so little of education, it might be their opportunity to break the tenure system or something like that.
Hey, you see, that was what I, because I'm sure Sam Brownback would say, well, you know, goodbye now. Don't let the door hit you. Yeah. And we'll, you know, we'll just get the NRA to give us some business professors and anthropology professors and some social work professors and French professors and whatnot that actually love America and our second sacred amendment.
Mm. I don't know. You know, it's kind of, the terrain here is a little, it's not always what it appears to be. Like, I can't name names and stuff like that when I'm on the phone.
No.
I said, I'm a regents level chair of distinction, regents level, and here I am talking about the place. But because I have a regents level chair of distinction, I understand the role of donors and their wishes. And that's, in a way, and we've talked about this before, it's kind of unfortunate that people with money can, you know, call the shots and whether the Confederate flag comes down and stuff like that. But they are there. And once I was on campus, I mean, my money comes from the East Coast. I mean, I've got a really sweet endowment from an incredible donor who doesn't interfere with anything I do at all. and it keeps me here, quite frankly. But because I run in those circles a little bit, I'm not bent on running in those circles. I'm just kind of like there in those circles, to some extent. I was aware that when there was a groundbreaking ceremony on campus once, that a couple of incredible donors, whose names will not be mentioned, were making, and I know this because I was at a dinner where someone told me, and because Sam Brownback had come to cut the ribbon on the ceremony, and these incredible donors were just making fun of our governor. I mean, just totally in public, you know, not at the microphone, but it kind of openly, which is not particularly good form, I guess, but it wasn't like a lot of people could hear them. But, you know, it gave me the idea that you never know what's going on behind the scenes. So, not to overthink that, I just wanted to give you the updates in two areas, concealed guns on campus and Kansas running out of money. So I don't know how we put those two things in the same paragraph without thinking.
Well, and the larger question, we got to get out of here, but the larger question, Diane, is what does it take for people to realize that, A, they've been looted, and, B, things are going to get they're not as bad as they can get. See, after Sam Brownback has looted the place is when it'll really be awful. I can't imagine anybody wanting to be governor after Sam Brownback.
Well, Mr. Gosin, someone came up after the lecture. I was still standing there with Dwayne Gosin, and someone said, well, Brownback can't be here more than another year and a half or something like that, and then what happens? I mean, how can we rectify this? How quickly can we? And Mr. Gosin had... Dwayne had tried to be compassionate with the audience and not shocking them too much. I said, what do you think, Dwayne, 30 years? And he said, if it can be done at all, a generation. So, and after that, I was just kind of depressed.
Yeah, and because we don't have a generation to give, Diane.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm not retiring here or anything. I'm not. My mother's still alive here. I'm here. I'm headed to New York at some time, you know. So I mean, I'm not, but I'm depressed for that could happen to a place like Kansas, and it's just not.
With so many of the Midwestern states, whether it be Kansas or Wisconsin or Iowa, the state university there is a jewel.
It's a jewel. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And it has been the incubator of prosperity and the incubator of knowledge and increase and social good, and all of that goes away. And these things, as we've noted, Diane, these things do not happen by accident. This is not a boating accident. Sam Brownback went after the state universities in Kansas. Well, it's no different than what Scott Walker did trying to disassemble the very Wisconsin idea.
I mean, they must walk around with bodyguards, right? I mean, no one's happy with them, and everyone has guns. You know what I mean? And I'm not suggesting a darn thing. I'm not. It makes me kind of wonder. You know, they must wear Kevlar or whatever that is. I mean, and on that note, I'm not very happy tonight, but that's my update. Mom.
Well, you have to call in again because, as Ron notes, you add a powerful, elevating voice to the conversation. And he also wants to know if you'd like to coach the West Virginia University football team.
What?
You couldn't do any worse.
Oh, go Wildcats, right? I mean, I had to work that in the other night. God only knows why.
Because that hurt. That hurt last Saturday.
I know. I knew it was.
Or Saturday before last. Yeah.
No. Oh, I think I'll pass on coaching. But next time I call in, I'll tell you about Bill Snyder's induction into the Hall of Fame, because that happened. The College Football Hall of Fame in New York.
Yeah, because that's a thing. Absolutely. All right, Diane, have a wonderful evening.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
Bye now. Oh, the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas, Stan. Always a treat, always a joy. And it's time to get out of here because Moran Monday has come and gone, and we're just going to have some leftovers for Titanic Tuesday. I'm sorry, but that's how it goes sometimes. We will begin tomorrow trying to raise $390. Thanks very kindly, Glenn, for helping out and getting us started. And thank you again, Ed, for taking a bite out of throwing a big spade of earth in on the hole from last week. And thank you, Dave. Thank you, Dave, very kindly. I think you're going to love, you're absolutely going to love your portrait feather. So that's it, and we really are up against it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to all of you who listen, who contribute, who call, who write. You are what makes and maintains and sustains this community. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.